But while I'm in fact the organizer's Bob Remy here, I may disappoint you. I will not talk about fire, neither statistics. But there will be something interface between statistics, special statistics, and ecology. So now we got the title. Already show you already. So I have to confess, when I made the PowerPoint presentation, I really had a trouble to give a title. So I thought over, you know, I know statisticians like the word parsimony. So just for handy, I call it spatial ecology. But I don't take the title to heart. A spatial ecology to different people have different context, different meaning. Here, what I like to show you is to explain you, in order to understand ecology, space is really important component for understanding ecology. So here I try to give you some spatial perspective for understanding ecology. Certainly the perspective is likely biased by what I know and what I don't know. The main thing of ecology starts from day one. That's about like 100, 150 years now. Start day one. Is to study the spatial and temporal dynamic of populations. However, it was not until about 20 years ago, that ecology finally realized, you know, spatial component is really, really a fundamental component. So, you see, it's been so many years, you know, spatial components is a fundamental component of ecology, but it's really recently that ecology realized that took spatial components seriously. So about 10 years ago, there's a special issue. We call this, you know, space is the final, is the last frontier in ecology. The reason why ecology took so long to realize the importance of a space, maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because ecologists is a group of slow mind, but they're not short of a great thinkers, ecologists. Perhaps, I guess, you know, they have not many, a few spatial theory and the techniques available at that time. Now, in recent 20 years, suddenly, you know, many new methods in space develop, you know, and ecologists that, you know, get access to this method, and that they can use this method to look at the ecological problems. So there are many reasons why ecology space is so important in ecology. So here I give you a few ecological reasons. I basically divide it into three levels, ecological system. One, first level is a genetic level, and the second is population, and the third is community levels. Like genetic, we know the milestone of genetic evolution is the Hardy-Weinberg equilibrium theorem, right? Which predicts genotypic frequency in the offspring from the allele frequency of parents. That's the key assumptions in the Hardy-Weinberg theorem. That is random mating. However, geographic varies can break down this random mating. If individuals are more likely to mate, for example, with neighbors, than with the mate choosing at random from the entire population. So you can see the space really play a fundamental role here. And also speciation, that is the branching process by which different kind of organisms originate from a single ancestral population. In by geography, the number of wave of speciation, one is called allopatric speciation. So it's a geographically isolated species, diverge and evolve into different species. This is a classic examples for allopatric speciation. I'm sure many of you probably heard of this Darwin finches. This is the Galapagos Islands off a coast of Ecuador. So that is the place where Darwin start to think of the evolution, how speciation take places. So allopatric speciations, the finches live on this island, the proximity of the various islands has permitted enough migration of the finch to establish the population on the island, but the distance and also strong wind prevents migration of finch from one island to another island. So in this way prevent interbreeding so that the finches on each island evolve into distinct species. This is some of the species here, some species only live in the canopy, others live on the ground. So this is the very typical examples how space play roles in determining biological processes. That is on genetic evolution level, on population level. Population growth is fundamentally, we know, there's four basic processes in determining population size, like birth, death, immigration, and emigration. So migration is a spatial process defined by spatial parameters such as like dispersal distance, dispersal mode with narrow tail dispersal or fat tail, and also environmental heterogeneity. This parameter like are ultimately response for the numerous observed spatial patterns distribution. This is a particular interest area, in determining like invasive species. We look, how invasive species come and what the speed a species invade, spread, how fast it establish occupied area. So next population level, next one is the population interaction. There are two basic interaction types. One is a prey-predator, another one is a competition. There's classic studies done by Hufik in 1958. He showed, prey-predator in a homogeneous environment can both quickly die out. If there is spatial heterogeneity, prey and predator can coexist for a long time. So that is a population level. And the community level, community basically is assemblage of species. Populations, we look at dynamic individuals population. Communities, we look at the interaction and the collective patterns of multiple species. So many community theories are developed to describe the distribution of species in space, actually. Like the theory of island biogeography, niche theory, and even the recently developed neutral theory of Steve Harbour. So So there are many community patterns, such as speciary curve. That is one of the major community patterns. Beta diversity, others, you know, developed to describe a spatial distribution of species. Beta diversity basically means the species composition turnover. The similarity, for example, in the composition of species in a location, how much of the species composition, similarity of species composition in one location relate to what the similarity between the species, what the similarity in species composition between two locations. That's a beta diversity. And in terms of application, there's a tremendous interest in determining how to spot a cold spot on Earth. This is because to protect diversity, you know, this the goal is that we want to protect relatively small area, but as many species as possible. So we need to identify the biodiversity cold spot and hot spot. And interesting thing is, hot spot and cold spot can change with spatial scale, with a spatial resolution. So a cold spot can become hot spot if the resolution change, and the reverse also true. So for doing that, it requires us to understand how diversity change over space and over scale. And also, part of my own interest, like modeling species distribution. For example, two maps, let's say this is vegetation distribution before European settlement, after European settlement, you know. So we want to look how much the vegetation changed. And also, in some area, like the empty area, we don't know this is a true absence of a species or because of lack of survey. So this relates like an image installation and so on. And also we want to explain why species distribution species distribute in this way. Like you saw your climate variables. So this is basically I gave you some reasons why space is important in ecology. I don't think I need to go over this, why space is important in statistical term. There are numerous applications of spatial statistics in ecology. Here's some of the things I summarize. It's not the list can be potentially very long. This is the thing I have an interest. We are not go over the entire list, but I give an example of my own research that is used spatial patterns, spatial location to infer competition, to infer ecological processes. In terms of competition, there are two types of competitions. One is intra-specific, that is a competition between individuals of the same species. Another one is inter-specific competitions, that is a competition between individuals of different species. So here is some assumptions. If there is no selective mortality, no selective mortality means random mortality. Every individual in the area can have the same chance to die out. Then spatial distribution of pre-mortality and the post-mortality should remain the same. If the post-mortality pattern is more regular, then the pattern of premortality, then there's evidence of a competition. And if the postmortality pattern is more aggregate, then the pattern of premortality, there's evidence of attraction. So my interest here is we try to infer competition for a plot we expand on Vancouver Island. That the Dr. Fur, old Dr. Fur stand. So they in the stand there are three major species. One is Dr. Fur. Another Dr. Fur is a pioneering species. What that means is when a stand is clear cut, Dr. Fur, the fifth one, occupy that area, grow. And hemlock and the western hemlock and western red cedar are late successional species. So it's late coming. But is hemlock and red cedar, if shade tolerate, it can hide under the canopy of Dr. Fur for a long time. Wait for opportunity to grow up. Once, you know, Dr. Fur grow up, competition causes mortality. So some Dr. Fur, big Dr. Fur that die, then create a gap that the light can penetrate into the gap. So hemlock and red cedar will seize the opportunity to grow up. So there are a lot of interactions here, compete for light. Here I show you that live tree, photography only, live tree and the dead trees. So we want to test whether those black points, where those point that the death is random death or it's have selective death. So random death, it means every tree have the same chance to die, right? And if it's random mortality, then the spatial pattern should remain the same in pre-mortality, after mortality. You can use several techniques like replicate or study as a pair correlation function or something, anything you think appropriate. Here I use a replicate function. You can see here, this is the envelope based on 25 simulation. And this, this actually not show up here, it's fairly light. There is one, this one, observed distribution for dead live trees. Actually say, it's up this curve, up this, the observed distribution for live trees. So dead live tree, all those trees were alive, let's say 10 years ago or 5 years ago. All right? So this curve is at the mortality, only for the live trees. You can see the spatial pattern for the live trees to become more regular than live or dead. The pattern for live trees becomes more aggregate. Actually, the live dead trees, the L functions form here. For red cedar, not much difference. So you can see there's evidence for intraspecific competition for Dr. Fur. The reason for hemlock to become more aggregated is because of the interspecific competition between Dr. Fur and hemlock. Because Dr. Fur died, hemlock occupied into a gap. So it formed because of intraspecific competition, so any hemlock tree near Dr. Fir tree cannot survive. So it becomes, after that, it becomes more aggregated. The evidence show up here. I will not go over the detail because of the time limit. So we can use the spatial pattern to infer competition based on the spatial pattern. This is for the old growth. Now we have also mapped younger stands, and they try to understand, you know, to answer some question like, are these findings applicable to younger stands? Charmaine and I, we collaborate together to try to understand, you know, how the ecological process change over time. So we use the spatial pattern to try to answer some of these questions. There are many open questions in spatial ecology. One of them, for example, here, I give a few here. So separate the biological mechanisms, how we may separate, given a spatial pattern, how we may separate biological mechanisms from habitat heterogeneity. For example, aggregation, given aggregated pattern. Aggregation can be caused from a dispersal limitation. Dispersal limitation, I mean, like a seed can only disperse to a certain distance, or pollination can only take place in neighborhood. It can create patchy distribution. Dispersal limitation, this is a hypothesis, a big hypothesis in biodiversity theory used to explain why tropical rainforest is so species rich. And so this is the purely biological mechanism, but the habitat, that is underlying environmental condition. So how we may design a study, a field sampling, separate this. So this is really, right now, it's really a challenging question, and the ecology want to know whether there is possibility to do that. I will not go over all of these things, but I like to bring your attention to this issue, the scaling issue. Scaling issues, like here with the same plot, if we want to scale up the map, like this is the resolution, this is finer, the cost resolution. For like a bar, we can simply add up. But for color, like a black, red, white, that three color here, you cannot add up six colors. So this way, I call it non-additive. Almost all the spatial, like a geostatic, is designed to handle additive variable, but not for non-additive variables. For additive variable, you know, you create a frequency distribution from different resolution. For additive variable, you may make a link, you know, link this connection. But for non-additive variable, this is still huge question marks. Very quickly, I give an example here. By tropical rainforest from Malaysia, 50 hectares, 1 kilometer, half a kilometer. The total number of species, 814. The total area is 50 hectares. If you divide the total number of species, 114, by the study area, so this is number of species per meter squared. When you compare diversity from, like, let's say, Yellowstone National Park and Banff National Park. Some people say, okay, Yellowstone National Park, there's a two species per meter square. Banff is 2.5 species per meter square. Okay, you say Banff is more diverse than Yellowstone. That's nonsense. The reason for that is not additive. You see, I divide the entire plot by 5 by 5, 5 by 5 meter, times 10 by 10 meter, 20 by 10 meter and average them, you see the number of species per meter square change. So you cannot compare diversity between two areas by the number of species per unit. The reason for that is number of species is non-additive variable. So this is still a challenge issue, how we may develop methods for comparison. Finally, I would like to take a minute to introduce you a network. This is a network I heavily involved. They call the Center for Tropical Rainforests, coordinated by Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute based in Panama. There are 18 plots. Most of the plots are 50 hectares, 1 kilometer, half a kilometer. We map every single tree on the 50 hectare plot. Give you an idea how big a 50 hectare plot. If you go into the plot, you will get lost for sure. For sure. Last 2 years ago, I was in Panama, and there was a guy, he worked on the plot for quite a long time, and got lost, you know, still got lost. So we mapped every single tree with a DBH larger than 1 centimeter. So in total, 18, we almost have like 3 million, we mapped 3 million trees. We tag each single tree with a unique number, and we go back to sensor. This is sensor data. We go back to survey every 5 years, measure the DBH every 5 years for every single tree. So like the oldest plot is in Panama. That's the Panama Canal at the Gantu Lake. This is called the Barro Colorado Island. So this site is the Pacific Ocean. That site is the Atlantic Ocean. So this is the Panama City Bridge of the America. The Panama Canal, this is the artificial lake where Americans, you know, build the canal. They create the lake. So this is in the middle lake. Our 50 hectare plot is here. This is the longest, oldest plot, almost 30 years now. So we have 5 sensor data. Okay? And this Steve Hubble, he was initially at Princeton University, now at the University of Georgia. Basically, he spearheaded the network. He's a cousin of Telescope Hubble. And in BCI, you know. So, you see, here I should basically show you for BCR plots, 2 species. You know, this species like to live on the slope, and this species that like live to swamp, low area. And this is the plot is from Panama, from Malaysia, that's a plot. The reason I introduced this is network by you say, I like to tell you there are tons of spatial point data out there. Our interest for the network is to try to understand by diversity how by diversity is originated and how by diversity is maintained. Thank you. We have soil data?